Adam, what'd you think, man? We just got done interviewing Scott, who is the unofficial data mesh guy. That's my new name for him. Data mesh is pretty popular. I know that a lot of people are talking about it. They've been talking about it for about a year and a half now. You've asked others on this show itself what they think about the data mesh. So I want to hear what your thoughts are firsthand after we just got basically thrown around in a washing machine and indoctrinated into the data mesh community.
Yeah, well, it's a big topic, isn't it? And it's, look, the energy Scott puts into that community is great. And it's grown really quickly. There's a lot of people in there finding their feet on different stages and stuff. I liked that he's really open about how formational it is, like how there's not so many people that have done all of it, and you kind of have to find your own way. It's a really interesting topic. I think you said at one point, there's so much promise in there.
Yeah,
it's, again, it feels like where MLOps was a while back, where like no one really knew what they were doing, and it was I've got Jupyter notebooks, and it feels like maybe just a little bit earlier in its journey or something. Really, really good tool. Really enjoyed speaking to Scott there.
Yeah, so for those who don't know, Scott heads up the Data Mesh learning community. He's doing stuff with a newsletter. He's got a podcast. He's got the Slack workspace. We'll leave links to all of that below. He also works at DataStax on his, I guess, for his day job when he's not doing this Data Mesh stuff. He's doing a lot evangelizing the Data Mesh theory. And I think the biggest thing that stood out for me, because of course there's a lot where it sounds great in theory, and he was very honest and very open about this. It's like, yeah, it looks great on paper, but then in practice, it's a different thing. And data's messy. It's just really hard to work with this stuff. But the end goal there is, it's very commendable. Like, we should be striving for that. And so my biggest takeaway was that there is no silver bullet. When you want to say, all right, what's the nitty gritty? How can I get down and dirty with this data mesh? Like, I want to do it. I'm bought in. What do I do? Where's my first step? What's an easy win? It's like, well, we don't really have that figured out yet. There's no clear roadmap for getting a data mesh set up, because everyone's data infrastructure and what they have, like just this years of baggage, it comes with them. And so each person is going to be doing a data mesh differently.
Yeah, and I agree. And I think it's like stuff we talked about recently, actually the specifics of your context, your organization, whatever, your baggage, the skills you already have, the experiences you've had, makes such a big impact on your decisions, in that there is no one size fits all. Like, it's not been applied to so many companies that you can just abstract it into a template just yet, I think, which is quite cool.
Yeah. And of course, I wonder if it will ever get there, right? Because there are so many ways to do, even though there is some centralizing around like, a data stack or whatever, or people like to make you think that there is centralizing around that. And if you're doing data, you need these components for a data stack. I still think there are infinite possibilities of how you can set up your data at a company. And it may range from your company's 20 years old, 30 years old, and so you have all of this legacy systems, where it may range to like, I'm new, I'm just starting now, and so I can use the best and most cutting edge or the coolest shiny products. So it's going to be really hard to say, get started with the data mesh by following these steps, just because of all the different ways you can architect your data and your data platforms. So we'll see. I don't know. I don't know, man. I said it in here. Like, I think this, the ideas and the goals of a data mesh are almost in a way like world peace. Everybody says that they are for world peace, but at the end of the day, we still have wars. So what's going on? I think that's my biggest thing with the data mesh. We still got to see. Hopefully we can get there one day, but as of now, we're not there. We're not even close.
Definitely one to watch.
Yeah. All right, man. Let's start it. And if... Oh, wait. Dude, you got to stand up and show us what you're wearing.
The t-shirt came through.
There it is. Oh.
Things happened to good data. So there we are.
So for those who are just listening to this, Adam got some merch, Bad Things Happen to Good Data, and he also got some for his little one that is along the way that hopefully we're going to get some pictures for. Yeah, and you can get some merch too. Here's where I go into sales pitch mode. We got the website on the link provided below if you want to check out some merch. It is, there's all kinds of good stuff. I'm wearing my merch today. Yeah, very decently priced. Exactly. I'm not just going outrageous pricing because I know you all are machine learning engineers and getting paid way over the amount that you should be getting paid. But well, if you're not getting paid that in this current market, you need to renegotiate. Anyway, let's get into the data mesh. It was great having you, Adam. And
thanks, Demetrios.
That's it. Data mesh, let's talk about it, Scott. What are we going to do today, man? Well, give us the high overview. I know that you are the data mesh guy, and I'm looking forward to hearing everything we can about it. There's a lot of hype around it. So what the hell is the data mesh, man?
Good question. I think I'm going to do it from a bit of a different angle than a lot of people typically talk about it, to talk about like what is the point of it and what are we trying to accomplish when we talk about it. So I think of it in kind of the data mesh is an onion, is an ogre, is a parfait. It's got layers, the Shrek reference. So when you think about what is service mesh, service mesh isn't just a bunch of services. It's how you have a bunch of services together and they work together and communicate together. Data mesh is kind of the same concept. That's where Jamak Deghani is the person who came up with data mesh and is the leading voice on it in general. But data mesh is a set of data products, and then at the core layer, it is a bunch of products made of literal data, where you take your data and you create sets of data combined together into products. So it's not just individual tables, it's not individual streams, it's multiple sets of data around a specific topic. And then it is designed specifically for analytical use. So how does that matter for ML? We'll get into that a little bit later. But the kind of interesting way about it is that these data products aren't designed to answer specific questions. They're designed to be used to answer questions. So you can take the data products and, you know, take data from multiple different data products and combine them together to answer many different questions instead of people trying to predefine what questions you might want to answer, which is kind of how data warehouses work. So that's kind of the core layer. The second layer is,
Just before we jump to the second layer, sorry, can you define data products a little bit more? Because I know that's like a key piece and I've seen it being talked about quite a bit. Like, what is a data product?
So within data mesh, it's a different concept than the industry concept. The general industry, you know, it's a naming collision. Jamak named the data product back in 2019, and then there's been, you know, 10 different definitions that have come up since. So it's fun in that way. But within data mesh, it is literally a product made of the data. So it is, you think about the data itself is the product. The general industry term is backing a product heavily with analytics and data and things like that. So it is different, but you think about, you bring the data in raw, you transform all the data within the data product. So the data product itself controls all of the transformation. And then you also think about how it's going to be consumed is part of that product, right? You have a user experience to your data tables, which is kind of a new concept, but you think about, would the data scientist really want to be pulling this into CSV? Probably not, but the data analyst might. They might want to use SQL. You think about, is a data scientist going to want to use, or, you know, ML engineer or whatever you want to use for the terms, are they going to want to use this data? Okay, I want to create an experience where they can pull this data in a useful way, and that the, it's repeatable and it's trustable and things like that, right? You've got, it's not that there is an individual data pull. It is that this is a repeatable product that is defined service level agreements, right? SLAs, so people can know what it is, what it comes from. It's highly documented. They know how trustable it is. Oh, we've only, we're updating this on a, you know, 5-minute basis. So, you know, there might be some collisions of around streams where it might not be exactly once. It, there's a lot of different ways when you think about who you're serving with each data product as to what are the features of it. And what are the kind of trustability and things like that. If something's updated every day, you'd want 99.999% correctness. But if something's updated at like, you know, a 3-4 minute thing, stuff gets delayed, things kind of happen around the processing side.
So I cut you off on that second part then.
Yeah.
You were breaking it down. What was the second part that you were going to say?
So the core layer again is this set of data products, but like how, great, how do you do that? The second layer to me is you're shifting the responsibility of owning the data to the people who know it best, the domains. So the if you're not doing domain-driven design, doing data mesh is going to be pretty difficult, right? The lines of business know the data best. So you want to shift the responsibility for owning that data to them so they can focus on structuring their data products in such a way that it maximizes context. You also need to go to interoperability, which I'll get to in a second, because otherwise you just have high quality data silos. If everybody's structuring their data however they want and you're not thinking about how people can use that to combine data, your ML engineers are going to be screaming and throwing things at me right now, right? But to enable the domains to actually handle this, you have to give them resources. Is that people that really understand data modeling that you're going to put into the domains? You're going to take data engineers and put them into the domains? Possibly, in a lot of instances, that's what people are doing. It's also that you create a self-service platform and that self-service is for, the data producers to produce data products and focus on sharing their information, not on managing infrastructure, right? So they get to specifically focus on the part that matters and not on managing Kafka or, you know, whatever streaming or Spark or Snowflake or any of that stuff. That stuff is managed at the platform level. The other aspect is that for interoperability, you have standards that you have the teams adhere to around the data. This is still pretty nascent to me. I haven't seen anybody get the specifics of here's how you do these standards. Here are the standards we recommend. You know, I'm trying to dig into that as well. I launched a podcast to kind of dig into these very specific topics of the, you know, instead of the 5 whys, the 5 hows. Just like, okay, how do you do this? Okay, let's get specific. Let's get specific. Let's get specific. But, you know, you need to think about that. Otherwise, the whole point of data mesh is to be able to combine data from a lot of different sources and be able to get a fuller picture of what's going on in the world relative to your business, instead of just the domains being able to share only what they're seeing, or that you have an enterprise data warehouse where it doesn't really show the full picture of what's going on with the business. And you have that product, data as a product mindset concept to evolve, right? So you're not, oh, this is this table and we've had this same table in the same way for 10 years, you can't touch it, versus, hey, the business has moved on from thinking about that table in that way, so we've had to evolve it. And you talk with your consumers about that. The other aspect of the platform side is to have a self-service platform for getting at data, right? You think about data products should have access by default, and they have to mask certain data, PII and things like that. But you make it easy so people can go and data spelunk, right? Instead of just going into the data lake and going, what data do we have? Okay, I have no idea if this is updated or useful or correct. It's documented, and there's like specific ways to get that. And you have a data product owner who you can go and ask the questions of, right? Hey, I need this access. I need access to the PII for this reason. Or, hey, you're sharing this information, but what I would really like is this information in this other format or this other way. Can you create that for me? And that's their job. Their job is to work with you as a consumer, that you're an actual customer. You're the most important aspect of the data product, is the customer, the consumer for that, and that you make that easy. And then the third layer is, for me, is the people process side, which is somewhat, again, giving the domains the resources if you're putting data engineering talent into that. But it's, you need to really up your, and you need to up your trust environment. You need to make it so that you can have these conversations, and that it's not okay. It's not the kind of back and forth that happens when there's data downtime or there's data issues. It's, how do we fix this going forward? How do we set this up so that it goes well? I think, how does it all apply to ML is, well, if you're an ML engineer, one, you've got somebody who now knows what data they've got and what data they're shipping into the data mesh. So for your model creation, you've got data that you can go and find. And then once your model goes into production, they understand that their changes have impacts, and that you've created like tooling to help them understand what their impacts are. So they're not just making these changes and breaking your ML model constantly. They have to make that ML model a first-class citizen. So sorry if that was a little bit of a run-on, but yeah.
No, that's so one thing that always gets me is that interplay between, very ML specific. As a data scientist, you want freedom to explore and like fire in new data sets, see if they add to the model, right? So say that happens, you're using some data products and you build a model, and actually you do a little bit of exploration, you find an external data source that's really useful. Or maybe there's a different cut of data that's not quite in the data products that actually really improves the model. What's the interplay then of like, for me, it kind of feels like, then do I go as a data scientist and go, right, I need this data set, but it's in your domain. Do I dump a load of requirements on that team and that domain, or am I restricted? Like, could it be a little bit restrictive to the exploration process? I can completely understand the benefits of having all the stuff that's available being really top-notch, really high quality to these standards, but that responsibility for like new stuff and passing requirements around, has there anyone done any work on that?
So I haven't had a lot of conversations. I did talk with Max Schultz at Zalando kind of about this, of how they're looking to do this, but exactly what you're talking about is important. Like that culture aspect of, are you dumping requirements on somebody? No, because that's just a ticket, right? You want to go to them and have a human to human conversation, which engineers sometimes don't want to have. But there is a, if you have the culture aspect right, there's buy-in that matters, and that person wants to serve their customers, their consumers. And so you would go to them and say, hey, this isn't in a data product. You know, their job is to take the concept of data on the outside, like what data should you be sharing with other domains, and put it into data products. So if they're not including all the data that they've got that should be shared, then you want to go to them and say, hey, like, could you share this? Let's work together to get this. It's not, hey, I need this. It's, you know, do this in the next, you know, 4 days or whatever. It's not dumping a ticket on their backlog. It's going and saying, like, let's prioritize this. Let's have a conversation. Or, you know, you might say, I think this data might be useful, right? This data might be useful. So let's work together where I can get some access to it in a not necessarily super clean format, but I can play around with it. Let's have that conversation as to, do I need you to fully incorporate this into a data product, or can we just have that conversation and I can test with it? And then if it is useful, we have a mechanism for moving forward, right? That it's not, oh, okay, this was great. And then I'm going to put it on your backlog, and it's 6 months later that you get it. And you're like, well, that information is no longer useful. That model didn't prove to be useful enough because it didn't have that information. And so I've moved on or whatever. It's that prioritization and understanding that the data matters and that you can work with people to put it into the format that you need. You don't have to spend, you probably are going to want to spend time prepping and cleaning your data in some sense, but you know that the data is trustable in the way that it is documented, right? How much can I actually trust this data? That's kind of the way it is right now when you find something in the data lake, because it's not typically very well documented versus, oh, I know exactly how often this is updated. So if I need this on a minute by minute basis, I know that I have to go to the team and talk with them. And maybe there's a one-off thing where, okay, you don't need the full data product on a minute by minute basis, but you need these 15 columns. And they're like, okay, we're going to set up a pipeline for you to do that. And we're going to, that's going to be a separate one-off. It's not necessarily part of the product, but you have those communication avenues, right? A lot of the issue with domains is they don't have an ability to understand how people are consuming their data or why they're consuming it.
Can you talk to us a little bit about how the documentation works and how, because I know that like having data mesh set up, it gives you this source of high quality data and it gives you documentation, but how does that like play out, and how do you make sure that you're not just adding more onto somebody's already overflowing plate and asking them now to document?
So that's where you have to give the domains the extra resources, right? You have to say, if you now have an additional responsibility of owning your data, it's kind of a ... not nice move. There's a different word that I typically use in private conversations, but it's a very not okay move to just dump on the domains. You need to do this responsibility of owning the data without providing them the resources. So you do need to provide tooling at the platform level where that documentation lives. You're not asking, you do in general want to put your documentation in the code, so that way anywhere that it's accessed from, people can get to that documentation as well. But you set standards internally, or you set kind of blueprints. You're going to the domains and saying, here is what a standard data product looks like. Here is what a standard documentation around this looks like. You're calling this column customer. Well, okay, in marketing, that means something different than sales, than in support, than in, it's totally different. Even like Jamak kind of talks about a streaming music service a lot with her examples. Spotify has, household accounts. So is the customer each individual login, or is it the household? And so that might be different for different domains. And so you want to provide people a much easier path to understanding what it means, where there is a freaking manual when you tell them to read the freaking manual, right? that it's not trying to extract information. Somebody's thought of it ahead of time and put it out there. So it's preparedness. You've got stuff that's just there.
So you touched on it a little bit there. But one of the things, and I know people get, I think it's just useful for the podcast, people get obsessed about and stuck on is the tooling and actually, okay, well, but what? And I don't think it helps. Companies like Oracle have now got a tool called Data Mesh, right? Which is going to complicate things even further. I think it's Oracle anyway. So yeah, what's the kind of response? When someone goes, yeah, but what tools is it? What do you mean? Is it a database? Is it Redshift? What's the kind of typical response for that? And where would you point people with those kinds of questions?
I would point them towards talking to other people that are implementing, because it's about what challenges are you trying to solve and what tools do you already like to use, right? When you're building out a platform, there is not something that you just deploy. So if you already like kind of what you're doing with your data catalog, okay, then let's figure out how you'd apply that to make it more scalable to what you're trying to accomplish with Data Mesh. There's a lot right now of roll your own, and that's been frustrating. Exactly what you're asking is frustrating for me, because we don't even have a great way of talking about what are the tool type selection questions you need to ask. Not just what are the tools to use, but when you think about you're bringing data in to process it. So a lot of people are using streaming technologies or a Spark or a Snowflake, and then you've got to store it in some form or fashion to be served. People are putting that into an S3 bucket, or they're putting it into Snowflake, or they're putting it into, a Spark or whatever. But a lot of this is roll your own right now, because the tools were never really designed to meet this use case. We're starting to see tools emerge that are more focused on data mesh, but it's still a challenge because so much of this is new and nascent. And it's not kind of the early days of microservices had similar challenges, but it's even more so on data mesh because data tooling hasn't really kept up with the advancements of software engineering for the last 15, 20 years. So even providing good testing framework for the application developers to say, is my schema change going to break my consumer's downstream data consumption? They have no capability to really know that from a direct tooling standpoint. You talk about data lineage tools. They don't start at the source system. They start at the first pipeline, right? So then how do you track between that pipeline and what changed in the source system? Like, how have we not thought of checking that and providing that lineage, but also providing checks to go, is this going to break all my stuff, right? Like, there's no ability at a tool level to even have empathy for your data consumers.
So there's something that for me, it's like obvious the benefits from a data mesh that you hear people tout. And it's like, yeah, I would love to have that. And I am bought into what you're saying, but how does it actually look in practice when you have to go create this and you have to like actually make it happen? Because I imagine that transformation is long, difficult, and painful. And like you said, it has a lot of people processes, not only the technology processes.
Exactly. And how does it look in practice? I've had this conversation with a couple of people where they say, okay, I just watched two of the meetups or two presentations or listened to two different blog posts or whatever. And these things architecturally look completely different. And how can I wrap my head around how would I do this? Saxo Bank is one that is stream mostly, like everything is in Kafka. So Glue is another company that's doing the same thing. Pretty much everything is in Kafka. But then you look at like Flexport and they're doing everything in DBT and Snowflake. And then you look at JPMorgan Chase and they're doing everything completely different as well. So architecturally, what you're trying to accomplish is giving the teams that are having to own the data the ability to own that data and serve that data and not care about the technologies. So what tools do your data engineering folks want to use for their platform? It doesn't really matter as long as it serves the purpose. That's a frustrating answer to get, but this is why I'm trying to extract more and more examples out of people to tell me, what are you doing to do this? Because there's so many different ways to approach actually accomplishing treating your data as a product and making that self-serve platform work. What you want is an easy experience for everybody, but then it's kind of, are you allocating too much magic to the platform? And we're still finding that balance. We're early days on this. This is kind of, it's bleeding edge, and it might be the bleeding edge of the bleeding edge, right? So if you're not prepared to go down this path, that is okay. That is a valid choice. If you're a startup and you're not having the issues that come with centralization, data mesh, a full data mesh implementation, probably not right for you right now. You can take the cultural shift and be prepared when it does become an issue. But if you're doing this at a huge scale, you want to look at all of the aspects of data mesh. But if you're a 200 person startup, you don't have enough data engineers to go and build a full data platform that makes it so that it's super easy to abstract the infrastructure completely away from people trying to own the data. So you can start to have that culture of, how do we think of our data as an actual product and that it's not just exhaust?
That makes sense. My kind of leads me to, and it's talking about, like, I think that it almost sounds like it's like a solution to bigger centralization problems, right? And
yes,
that's kind of like, because you think I work at a startup, right? And actually we can do what we like, and we haven't got the inertia of some big system we've got to decommission to put this in place. But it does feel like I suppose someone's got to blaze that trail for you, right? To be able to picture it sometimes. The thing that gets me worried a little bit about just going whole hog on this is, I like the idea of the product being the quantum in the mesh, right? So each node is kind of self-isolated, and that ties in with microservices and things like that. But I just worry that you get to that skills explosion of, if every node on the mesh is doing their serving and their storage of data in a new tool in a different way, are you adding lots of skills and things that you need to support, which means actually when I go to hire a new data engineer, it's actually not the same as a data engineer in your team or your team, because you do different things to us, and I need a, has that come up at all? Does people talk about that? Or in reality, is it a little bit more streamlined and kind of enforced than that?
So that actually plays on both sides, right? There's the data platform side for the data product producers and the data product consumers. So Jamak has talked about this a lot with the on the consumer side about providing a consistent experience. I haven't seen enough around this of people talking about their consistent experience, right? Is that the consistent experience is that you call APIs that all look the same, or that you've got, you know, a tool that provides that consistent experience? But exactly what you're talking about as well, of you as a data product producer, if you want to go and use your own tooling, and we'll get into that in a second, but if you want to use that, you still have to tie into the experience. If you do not tie into the experience, kind of, you know, you're not a team player. And it's, if people have to learn a new UI and interface to every single data product, it's going to be a nightmare. Nobody's going to want to use this, right? So that's great that you've created all this great data, but it's a nightmare to use. So on the other side of it, what you're talking about is a concern. And we've kind of had this debate and conversation within the community, you know, data mesh, as Jamak has defined it, there's a lot of white space as to how do we do this. And she kind of, her original blog post wasn't like, this is how you should do this. It's like, this is my theory for this. Let's talk about it. Let's evolve it. And that's kind of where we need to have that conversation. It's not fully baked, right? This stuff the concept and kind of what Dimitri has talked about of what you might get out of it is like, oh, that sounds so awesome. But like, how do we actually move towards it isn't fully baked. So the domain teams, if they want to use their own capabilities, great. But the data, they have to own the managing the infrastructure for those if they want to change relative to what's available at the platform level. The data platform team doesn't have to support absolutely everything. They want to create an experience that's going to serve 80% of the domains and the, you know, or 80% of the use cases within the domains. And if those domains have some kind of crazy use cases, they're going to have to support that themselves. And maybe as that becomes more widespread, you start to add that to the platform. But yeah, and as well, Adam, that point is really important for not getting too far ahead of yourself. You don't want to build your platform to support all use cases for all things. You want to support it for what are your data products currently.
And I think that dovetails perfectly into what I wanted to ask about next was like, as I've heard it from some people that are implementing a data mesh, is they talked about how they looked at it more as like a spectrum and they were doing certain things, but then they hadn't fully implemented other things. And so they picked what they liked and what they were able to get going. And then they weren't able to fully commit to the full data mesh, we could say. And so along those lines, like, what do you see as an MVP of that? Are there baby steps that you can get to that work up to where you're at this fully fledged utopia of data?
Yeah, and that question is a common one, and it's one that in the podcast I'm going to be deep diving into getting your POC going, because a lot of people are also in the other side where they're just kind of treading water and they're stuck. They're just trying to solve too much up front. So what I think is important to first look to is culture, right? If your team isn't bought in on this, I think it's going to be very difficult, especially your management team. The second aspect, that moving towards treating data as a product and that you're going to be trying to make sure that you set yourself up to win with data. Management team doesn't have to care that it's called data mesh. I don't care if you call it, you know, unicorn farts. I don't care, right? It's what are you trying to solve? What's the challenge that you're trying to solve? So where people can get in trouble is by trying to go too far with one. There are kind of four pillars. There's the domain data ownership, there's treating data as a product, there's the self-serve platform, and then there's federated computational governance. And federated computational governance is really like 9 mini pillars underneath one pillar topic, which is kind of the way governance is.
Go ahead. I'm just saying, yeah, big topic.
Yeah. And there's not a ton out there about it, but like everything is in data mesh is about, to me, empathy and reducing friction, right? So you want to think about who are the consumers of your data and how can you serve them? How can you make it so that the domains can manage a lot of the access control, because they know much better than others about how to, or what data is sensitive and what people might want to access and why, and they can kind of set things up so that people can get in there more easily. But you also need to have that centralized team that can backdrop. You know, not every team needs to know about GDPR and like the specifics of not violating that. And you need to provide it as tooling so that they can make decisions instead of managing more and more tools. But that becomes complicated at the platform level because it does become kind of a magic toolbox that is there to just reduce friction. And, you know, how do you get started on that? If you weren't, if you were to just get started, where I would think you want to go with is an understanding that your team is going to be doing this and kind of struggling a little bit with it, right? It's not going to be easy to start. It's not going to be perfect at the beginning. So let's have empathy for that and figure out how we can add some value, and that you build the platform for what are the current use cases. And you think about, again, we talked about earlier that data interoperability, these data products aren't going to live by themselves. That's not something that in a lot of the way data is prepared, at, especially at a lot of startups, you think about that interoperability, or at a lot of enterprise companies, you think about only the interoperability and you lose all the business context because you're trying to form it into just this very specific model. So you want to thread that needle and you want to think about how can we make it so that we can combine these data products or data from these data products with each other. And if you ask me about specifics, I'm very frustrated because I don't have specifics there. I haven't seen anything. There are some people who just know how to do data interoperability and it's just not being talked about enough. So that's another topic that I want to dive into with the podcast stuff is how, the five hows. I'm going to be obnoxious to certain people, but like deep diving into those because this is still so bleeding edge that it's difficult to know exactly how to implement. And that's where I'm trying to get people to just talk to each other, right? Share what you're trying to do, share where you've gone down bad paths. Like that stuff's super helpful. You prevent other people from having toil.
So let's talk about how this all relates to ML and ML ops. And I know that we touched on it before, like, and I guess my main thing, and I'm sure a lot of people listening to this, their main thing is like, yeah, it's great. This sounds really cool. And it's almost like world peace. Like everybody's for world peace, right? But like, how do we get there? And what can we do to get there? That's kind of, as I'm listening to you, I'm just like, hell yeah. Everything you're saying seems like it is not only reasonable, it's a step up from how we do things. But then it's almost like, wow, this is maybe too lofty of a goal. But coming back down to the ground and talking about like how we can deal with this with MLOps, I'm just wondering, what do each of these different pieces, these data products, how do they play with when someone is tasked with setting up and making sure that models go into production?
It's a great question. And I think, data mesh, great on paper, difficult in practice, right? Especially because there are so few people that are far down the journey. And it definitely is a journey. It's not a one or a zero. It's very much along that path. So from the beginning of creating the model, you have the source for the data, right? So you have an ability to get at the data and to reliably get to that same data over and over, right? Which is not always the case in a lot of things because, and the people who are producing that data understand that they have to continue to produce that data and that if they make changes that are going to break, there has to be communication with their consumers. You understand as your data producer who is consuming what. And Adam, you talked a little bit earlier about, oh, there's this new data or whatever. That data product marketing of saying, hey, we added this new table or these four new columns or whatever, you know, you might want to use that. That might be something that's interesting. That's an even like really cool potential example. So when you're thinking about creating the model and continuing to update and train the model, you have that source that, again, this is if you're doing it right. This is all best case scenario, right? People don't always get it right, and we're always working towards that. But you can trust that you can get back to the data and that there's good enough documentation where you can understand what it really means. And if you can't understand it, you have a person to ask, and you have a tooling that where you can have the discussion in the data catalog or whatever to literally ask, and other people can see those answers, and that it doesn't only have that one-to-one communication. There's that kind of group scalability. So that's creating the ML model. ML ops, when I think about keeping the model in production, you know, there's the data that's coming in to the model to actually, you know, when I'm thinking of like e-commerce and recommendation engine and things like that, you're not going to be getting the data live into your model via the data mesh. The data mesh is for analytical purposed data, right? So that would be for continuing to train your model and do that. If you've got that kind of live serving ML model, what you've got with data mesh or should have is the culture that they care, that they understand that stuff matters. And if they understand that stuff matters, they are going to work with their consumers to not break those models. Again, this is all great on paper. We'll see how that really works for a lot of companies in practice. But if you're talking about what are the ML ops engineers doing relative to data mesh, they're not really going to be the ones that are pushing a lot, right? They're not going to be having to add a bunch of new responsibilities. You know, you might have somebody who is tasked with providing the output of the ML model as a data product. So that might be on the ML ops engineer, that they actually have to share the output of that model as a data product, because that could be really interesting for other consumers. But in general, it's more kumbaya for ML ops people, because it's the higher empathy around their pain, right? So I don't see this as something where ML ops engineers will want to push back if their company wants to do it and do it right. But where it could go real wrong is data silos everywhere, and that you don't have that interoperability. And so then you're spending, yes, you've got high quality data, but you're spending all of your time trying to combine the data and keep those combinations steady and stable, right? Where somebody decides to change something upstream with data silos, and it's, you know, very custom setup for each data product, you're kind of SOL if you don't have those interoperability standards. So if it's done wrong, you know, people keep making the data mesh versus data mess joke. I credit Bar Moses as the first one to do it. And so I always say that Bar is the first for that. But it really, if you do this wrong, it's gonna be probably leave you in a worse state than you are now. There are some companies where I don't know that there could be a worse state.
Yes. Thank you, though.
Wait, well, that feels like we're playing very high stakes poker.
It is if you don't think of it as a journey, because if you're thinking about it as this is my one hand versus it's a relationship that you've got to build, right? Like it's kind of like, married at first sight versus trying to build a relationship to, you know, find somebody to partner with for your life, right? Are you trying to do too much too soon and get it all right? Or are you creating the culture where you know you're going to get a lot of things wrong, and that that's okay, and that you remove those stakes from it being such a disaster if something goes wrong, that you put in the guardrails so that you can figure out how to do it. That's where I think people are going to succeed. But again, there's 5-7 companies in the world that are more than a year and a half into their data mesh journey, right? Yeah. Like this thing really started picking up steam at the end of 2010. And then more people really got interest in the first half 2021. But a lot of what you've pushed back on here is why data mesh has lost some momentum and steam around people being excited about it, because there isn't nearly as much how to do this. And what somebody asked me to put together an FAQ, and I said, I think there are literally 600 questions that you would want to ask and answer over your journey. And that sounds daunting, and that sounds like, oh God, I shouldn't do this. There's a lot of companies where it's okay that you're not going down this journey, right? And I keep getting asked, you know, like, Adam, you're at a startup, you know, how do I get the benefits of data mesh without the work? You don't. You got to put in the work, but you don't also have to put in all of the work up front. You can evolve towards this and set your culture up so that as you're running across these incremental pain points, you can have those communications, and that you're agile enough with your, you know, not just agile from the you know, Scrum and all that fun stuff, but like that as a company, your ability to change yourself and change around your, you know, team topologies is an organizational framework that a lot of people use with data mesh, because it's about what are the friction points? What are your challenges? Let's go in, let's address those to try and clean them up in a quick manner, but then make sure that we have enough momentum behind it to keep that cleaned up for the longer term. And that's where I think data mesh ends up heading, but you're not trying to do all of it up front. If you try and do it all up front, you're gonna fail. I get yelled at a lot by telling people they're gonna fail, but if you try to do too much too soon, you go too far, you know. I a couple of days ago just started doing some air squats, and I did about 50 air squats. And the next day, my legs really hurt. I couldn't go run a marathon. I'm in bad shape. Right. So pace yourself and that kind of thing to make it not high stakes.
So I think tying well with that then, and risk like this, yeah, the high stakes poker kind of idea. Is there any advice for like, what's the quick win? How do I de-risk step zero in this for my company? Is there any kind of consensus on that? Like how could I go in tomorrow and start de-risking this for my execs and get people on board?
It's funny that people think that there's a consensus, and then I talk to 5 different people and they kind of all have different opinions. And this is what I'm trying to dive into for the podcast, right? Is how do you find those quick wins? Because in a lot of cases, there are quick wins, and that you balance that quick win with the long term, right? Because if all you have is long term vision, whoopty frickin' do, everybody's got, you know, as Demetrios said, you know, oh, it's world peace. Okay, we've got the path to world peace. It's 15 years long, and it's this and this, and everybody's got to cooperate in the right way. I think the quick wins are finding a couple of domains that are interested in serving their data in a way where they understand that they can get some value out of it, and that they can really figure out what's a good collaboration model with the end consumers. If you're starting at the beginning, you need to find people that are bought in, or that you can get bought in to get those quick wins. Intuit and DPG Media both did meetups, and they talked about kind of the same thing. They acquired multiple companies, and there wasn't a single place where you could have a centralized amount of information around their customers across their different product lines. So DPG, that was for doing their ad serving and understanding what people are consuming. So you can say, oh, okay, this person is consuming a lot of articles about sports. Okay, I'm going to put more recommendations for them buying their streaming sports packages in front of them. For Intuit, it was literally company or people would constantly be calling in and saying, I can't see all the products that I'm subscribed to under Intuit. So they cut off, you know, many, many millions of dollars of customer support costs by creating a dashboard that somebody could log in and say, what are all of my products that I'm subscribed to? I mean, it saved them a pretty ridiculous amount of money when you think about how easy that sounds. So can you find those within your company? If you can't, then maybe data mesh isn't the right thing for you. And if all you've got is data quality challenges and centralization isn't the big challenge, you know, kind of what we talked about a little bit earlier, Adam, that centralization isn't your big challenge, then, you know, there's probably easier ways than trying to go data mesh to solve those.
Incredible points here. Scott, I think we're going to cut it here, but this has been awesome, man. I appreciate you coming on here, talking to us about the data mesh and all things around data as products. It's awesome to see. And I hope that everyone listening gives us some feedback on this. Like, I know that the data mesh, as Scott said, it is an evolving thing. And so it's very dynamic. They have a Slack channel that you can jump in. A whole community has formed around that. Scott's got a podcast. Check that out. And there's a newsletter. I know there that one too. So if you want more information about the data mesh, we will leave all those links in the description below. That's it for now. Thanks, Scott.
Thanks so much. This was awesome.